At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more. My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
Now, as we said earlier, over 40 years, two British police units acted undercover to infiltrate activist groups. At least 20 of those officers deliberately targeted women and entered relationships with them. One of those women was our first guest today, Donna McLean, and here is her story. Thank you for being on the show with us, Donna.
Hi there, lovely to be here.
Now, this was all part of the spy cop scandal, wasn't it? I was reading about it. It's quite shocking.
Yeah, I think it's been vastly underreported, and I don't think people quite realise the scale of it. But there are, to my knowledge, at least 50 of us now who were involved in these deceptive relationships. And I think that's probably only the tip of the iceberg. So women who were targeted by the two units that you've talked about, which started in 1968 and went on up until 2011.
And do you know why he targeted you?
I suspect it was because I was part of a group of friends who were left-wing activists who were very much involved in trade unions and were very much involved in anti-racist politics as well. So I wasn't particularly active. I came from a left-wing family. I was a trade union rep at work. I was originally a nurse, and then I went on to work in homelessness and drug treatment. But my friendship group, I think, was the main target, and I provided a cover. That was my main kind of role, was to provide a cover so that he could infiltrate these groups.
Without even realising it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, let's go back to the beginning then. We're not using real names, but you met Carlo. We'll call him Carlo. How did you both meet then? He obviously planned it, but you just thought it was a chance meeting.
Well, I met him. First of all, I met him when he came to my house 9 months before we got together. He was dropping off some packing boxes. So one of the things that they all had in common, spy cops, was they were all very practical, and they all drove cars or vans, which in those days in London was not always part of people's capacity to have a car or own a car when we were young. So he was dropping off packing boxes for a friend of mine who'd borrowed them. And then 9 months later, I bumped into him again on an anti-war demonstration, by which time I was newly single. I'd come out of a very long relationship, and I bumped into him there. But the interesting thing is, he said he didn't remember meeting me or coming to my house the previous time. So that obviously is something that I'm now conscious of.
Yeah.
But we met on that day. We were with a group. He was with friends of mine. He was a steward on the march, which is how I spotted them, because they had those yellow high-vis vests on, and it was huge. It was the first anti-Iraq war demonstration, and there was, you know, almost 500,000 people on the streets of London. So I bumped into him there. He was with my friend. We all went for drinks and dinner, and it kind of developed from there. We were really pretty much together from that point.
And did you ask him what his full-time job was?
He was a locksmith. That's what he did when I met him.
Right.
So he had all the tools. He worked as a locksmith. He changed locks for just about everybody I knew. He said that he was very helpful in making people's houses safer. So of course that becomes another story when you look back.
Yeah, it's easy in hindsight, isn't it?
Very much so. But you know, it was a very believable cover. He had the car. He had an estate car. He had all the tools, and it was actually what he did. So there was a very definite cover there. He also had fake ID. So all of in his cover name, he had a bank card, he had a passport, he had a driving license. So all of that was very much, you know, evidence of who he was, or who he said he was anyway.
It all happened very quickly. I know that you fell head over heels. You were engaged within 3 months. But to be honest, you were understandably very vulnerable at the time. And I think he played on that, didn't he? If you've just come out of a relationship.
Well, I think so. And I think that's part of the, you know, part of the reason I mentioned the fact that he'd been in my house previously, because when he was in my house, I was with my ex-partner. So he knew that I'd been in a long-term relationship. He'd met my ex, and he knew that when I'd come out of it, I was probably quite vulnerable because I'd been with that person since I was at school. So it was, it was probably something that you could work on as a vulnerability, I think.
Yeah, I think so. So he sort of targeted you, and you thought you were both in love and you got engaged, despite him living a double life with another family, which presumably was his real family, and presumably they didn't know either.
His real family didn't know either, so his wife had absolutely no idea. So really, he was living two lives. And when he was with me, his wife thought he was at work. And when he was at work, he was probably with his wife. So the locksmith was obviously a cover job, but the times that he spent away from me, he would have been with his wife. And neither of us were any the wiser. The wives had no idea what was going on either. So really, in terms of the institutional sexism that applied to all of us women who were affected, and the wives were affected quite deeply. They had children with these men. The majority of them had children, and they had absolutely no idea. They thought their husbands were out doing life-saving work and stopping terrorism, and it was all very, very important and elite police work. But really, we were just spending a lot of our time doing very normal stuff, socialising, going on holiday, going for dinner. So, yeah, I think wow. It's a very strange one, because it wasn't about ever solving crimes or catching criminals. It was about protest and silencing protest. And that is the whole purpose of those two police units. It wasn't about criminality in any shape or fashion.
And did you ever find out why he and the other policemen did it? Is it just that they were told to do it because that was their job and they agreed? I mean, it seems like a very extreme thing to do.
Well, initially, the unit, the SDS, the Special Demonstration Squad, was set up in 1968, and that was because of the protests around the Vietnam War. So it was very much focused on silencing protest. And then if you look at the groups which were targeted heavily, so in my case, it was trade unions, anti-racist groups. You had environmental activists were very heavily targeted, animal rights activists. So what we've all got in common is the fact that we will stand up to the state. We will stand up to what is the kind of status quo. And I think it's very much about not just silence and protest, but it's also it's in collusion with business. So many of the people that I'm friends with now who were targeted were construction workers who were blacklisted from work. And they were blacklisted because of their trade union activities. And the whole point of that was to improve conditions, improve wages, make things safer. But the police and the business, the construction industry, were actually feeding information to each other. So it's also about money. It's also about the economy. It's about capitalism, I think. Mm. And in terms of the environmental activists, you know, we've seen time and time again, their protest methods can cause what some people would describe as huge disruption. So it's about trying to stop that. And I think also it was very much about trying to break up groups of people. So what they went in and did was they would cause trouble very subtly within groups and break up friendships. And, you know, that was a kind of purpose, to cause a huge impact so that the activities started to be derailed. It didn't happen in our group, so we've actually become much stronger as a result.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Did he get what he wanted? Did he? So he didn't. He didn't manage to split you up or arrest anybody.
No, absolutely not. I mean, he targeted people very personally. So, you know, as well as myself, he had another relationship before me with another woman that lasted almost a year. And when he left me, he went to live with quite a high profile trade union activist. And I only found out a year ago, actually, that he told that person that I'd kicked him out, and I hadn't kicked him out. But his, you know, the reason, this kind of strategy, the exit strategy, as we call it, was to further infiltrate the groups. So in leaving me, he went to live with someone who was very much involved in trade union politics.
Crikey. How long were you together, Donna?
2 years, just over 2 years.
Blimey. And you didn't kick him out. So did he leave you then?
He left me. He had apparently suffered a breakdown as a result of childhood trauma. So I was aware that there was trauma when we got together. It was one of the things we discussed very early on. But then new things had come to light when he'd gone to Italy for his father's funeral and he came back. Obviously, this wasn't true. His father was still alive at this point in real life. But he came back and he was very much a changed man. He'd lost weight. He looked scruffy and disheveled. And it was the kind of the beginning of the end of our relationship. And I was very distressed because he was very distressed. But he kept saying he still loved me and he would come back when he'd sorted his head out. So when he went off to live with my friend, he, you know, we still kind of stayed together for another 6 months after that until he finally left me by sending me an email to my work email address. That was lovely. Two weeks later, I got a package through the post of a spa day. A nice fancy spa day, but I have to say, Selena, I gave it away. I didn't keep it.
I don't blame you. So at what point then, Donna, did you find out what was actually going on?
It was a decade after he'd left. So it was 2015. He left me completely in November 2004. And I found out in the summer of 2015. So I got a message via Facebook from someone I hadn't seen for a decade. Then we need to talk about Carlo. We've got something to talk about. And it transpired that the group from then, the activists, had been working alongside the BBC and the Guardian newspaper. And they had already put a lot of the jigsaw together. They knew he was an undercover cop. They didn't know his real name. They needed more details, but they were absolutely certain that he was an undercover cop. Because at that point, 2015, since 2011, there had been several undercover cops uncovered by activists. So it had become, you know, it was kind of easier to put the pieces together. There was also a whistleblower, an ex-police officer who was a whistleblower, and several of the women who took the first court case had got together and they had taken a case against the Metropolitan Police. So by the time I came along, it was kind of 4 years into uncovering the scandal.
Blimey. And have you taken a case against the police?
I did. It was a very long and very distressing case, I have to say. But it did finally settle a year ago. Actually, a year ago this week. Thank you for reminding
me. Wow. Congratulations.
It was a year ago this week. It was a really grueling process. And I think part of, I've written a book, and part of the reason I wrote the book was to cope with the distress and the kind of the very disorientating effects of all of it. But something that I've written about quite a lot is the way that although the police admitted liability and although they held their hands up very quickly, they still put us through a very, very grueling civil procedure in order to settle the case, which involved multiple psychiatric assessments. And they are, you know, they're quite unusual. They're very distressing and they're quite re-traumatizing as well. So
yeah, I'm sure
it's an unpleasant tactic.
Well, you have written a book, as you say, and we will tell our listeners that the whole title, it's called Small Town Girl. Did writing that help you, or was it tough going through it again?
I think 95% of it was cathartic. 5% of it was banging my head on the table and occasionally needing to listen to some Northern Soul music to get through it.
Good choice.
There was playlists. I have lots of playlists. I felt I had to do it. It was the only way that I could really process what happened was to get it out of my head and get it on paper. And it was a complete accident. I never set out to write a book. I just started to write memories and fragments. And then I started to feel that it had some weight and that I could start to work with it. And I was just really fortunate that people came along and gave me support, and it ended up being a book.
Ah, oh, brilliant.
It's well not done. What I was expecting to be doing at this point in my life, but I'm very glad that I am.
Yes, well done. I think it'll help other people. And you have to remember that hindsight is a wonderful thing, because I'm sure whilst talking to me, you've said, you know, that was a red flag. And whilst writing the book, but at the time, you don't see it as a red flag. It's easy to look back and see these things, isn't it?
Absolutely. And the clues that are there. I mean, I think also even just the process of writing the book and seeing the number of people who were affected. Like even today, I had a message from someone, you know, who's a very old friend, and they just read the book, but they were really hit by it because they're part of the story. So they're actually in the book as well. And they were... they went into it thinking, well, I'm reading about your story, but they were part of the story. So it had quite an emotional effect on them as well.
Yeah.
And I think that's the, you know, that's the thing. It's the kind of the scale and the impact, the emotional impact and the effect it has on how you live and how you make decisions. That's, I think that's something that I really wanted to try and get across as well.
Yeah, quite right. And I believe reading another book helped you, Undercover by Rob Evans and Paul Lewis.
Well, yeah, I was interviewed by Rob very, very early on. And Rob, initially, I had read his book before I met him. So a friend of mine brought me the book when she came to visit from Glasgow. And she said, you have to read this. And I said, well, what is it? And she said, there's a couple of people that I know in this book. So I read it. And there was a point when I just thought, oh, my God, you know, this sounds so much like what happened with Carlo. And I had a little moment where the hairs went up on the back of my neck, and they're doing it again because they always do when I say this. But it just, because I could see the patterns in the behaviour of the men and how they came into the relationship and how wonderful they were for this period in the relationship. And then something would happen. There was always childhood trauma. There was always a breakdown. There was always a very kind of, you know, dramatic exit where they would disappear. And that pattern was replayed again and again and again. So it was obviously a strategy. It was obviously planned from the very beginning. But when I saw that, but then I just couldn't quite get my head around why I would be targeted, because I didn't see myself as an activist. So I didn't understand, but it was I think it was only about maybe about 3 or 4 months after that, that I got my message on Facebook. So it wasn't very long after I'd read the book.
Yeah. It's so wrong to use something like childhood trauma that people really have been through and it's affected their lives, and to use that as an excuse in order to get close to somebody. That's really wrong.
It's really horrible. It's really manipulative. And it was one of the ways that Carlo kind of developed a very quick intimacy with me, because we shared stories about domestic abuse in our childhoods. So mine was obviously real and his obviously wasn't, but that was one of the tools he used to kind of create that very quick emotional intimacy. Because when you've got something like that in common with people, you know, you have this bond. So yeah. I think it's incredibly manipulative. I mean, obviously, you know, deceiving people into sexual relationships is just fundamentally wrong, and it's an abuse of your human rights. But all those tactics are also really quite malicious and cruel, I would say.
Yeah, very wrong, shocking. One last question, Donna. Can you trust again? Can you trust a man again? Or are you always a bit weary?
No, I think I've come back to being a very trusting person. I think there was a period when it was very difficult. So, you know, the period I've talked about with the case and going through the kind of psychiatric stuff and all of that, but no, I'm in a completely different place now, and I'm really pleased. I'm glad that I've kind of come through it, and I've got energy to do other things. So no, trust is not an issue anymore. I think I'm who I always was, and that's how it should be.
I'm so happy about that, because he shouldn't take that away from you as well. He's already done very bad things, terrible.
Well, I think you're right. That's an act of defiance to be yourself and to be able to live your life. That's an act of defiance, isn't it?
Indeed, indeed. Well, we are selling the book on our website. It's called...
we
are. It's called Small Town Girl, Love, Lies and the Undercover Police. And it's by Donna McLean, who we're speaking to now. It is out now, isn't it? We don't have to pre-order it.
No, it was published in February, so it's available now.
Great stuff. Well, I shall
certainly be
downloading it myself. Donna, thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks so much, Selena. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.